In our regular Tuesday local news segment, we welcome Luke Stoddard Nathan from the Alt newspaper to talk about the in-depth local investigations he writes for that paper. So what's the news this week, Luke?
Hey, thanks for having me. As always, it's good to be here. This week, or I guess last week, I had a story that came out about – let me back up before I even start. Nationally, there's been a lot of talk recently about this federal legislation called SESTA-FOSTA, which basically made online platforms liable supposedly it's to prevent the promotion of sex trafficking through websites like Backpage and whatever. Although sex workers who use those platforms have been pretty critical of this legislation because they say, well, you know, it's robbing them kind of a platform that they use to conduct their business. Meanwhile, at the state level, state lawmakers have proposed this legislation that it wouldn't legalize prostitution or sex work, but it would. Remove this law that's been on the books in New York since the 70s that criminalized prostitution for the purposes of loitering, and that's what the statute says. And you might ask, well, what exactly is that? Like, how did they even determine what loitering? Sorry, I said prostitution for the purposes of loitering. I meant to say loitering for the purposes of prostitution. Okay, that was confusing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just doing it off the cuff today. And the reason, so you might ask, you know, what is that? And it turns out that the law is pretty vague, and that's kind of what the proponents of this legislation, Amy Paulin in the Assembly from Westchester, and Brad Hoyleman from Manhattan in the Senate, that's kind of what they take aim at. They say that, you know, this law is very vague. You know, when it's charged, women can be charged, and especially it kind of seems to burden women of color and transgender women in Manhattan and in New York City. You can be charged for it just if an officer sees you beckoning to a car, or if they see you walking. And oftentimes, you know, people who have been charged with this say that they had no intention of doing anything related to sex work. They were just going about their business, whether it was, you know, maybe they were just going to go grocery shopping, or maybe they were just waiting for the bus or waving to a friend who was passing in a car. You know, these are the kinds of things that they've raised in response. So, nevertheless, you know, it is prosecuted and people are arrested for it, you know, every year. And it's a violation for the first time offenders. But if you've already been convicted of prostitution, or if you've been convicted of the same statute, it becomes a misdemeanor. Low level misdemeanors, Class B misdemeanors, can be punishable by up to 90 days in jail. So, you know, the penalties are not insignificant. And so this law would repeal it. So
what are some of the expected impacts to the sex worker community or the communities at large by the repeal of this?
Well, so the reason I mentioned the SESTA-FOSTA thing at the top is that some people have said, you know, because these online platforms are no longer going to be viable ways of for sex workers to get clients, that might push them back onto the street. And, you know, if this law locally or in New York State were still on the books, you know, it could be used against, you know, people who used to use, you know, online platforms. I should say, too, that the Legal Aid Society has filed a lawsuit against the New York City Police Department, alleging basically that this statute is unconstitutional. And there's been resistance toward this statute since the 70s when it was first put on the books, as you can probably imagine. And I think loitering laws more broadly have always kind of been constitutionally problematic. And in the Legal Aid lawsuit, it's a class action lawsuit. And most of the named plaintiffs are women, transgender women of color, who say that they've personally, you know, been impacted by this statute. And, you know, I talked to someone who has worked on this on the litigation, and they said, you know, what would probably happen is if this law were passed, it would kind of negate the need for the lawsuit. You know, the legislation would, you know, make it kind of moot, I guess.
And there's no reason to find something unconstitutional if it's no longer valid.
Right. I mean, that's kind of the gist of it. And I guess one other sort of interesting thing is that this legislation has a pretty broad base of support. You know, a Women's Prison Association, the Bronx Defenders, a bunch of different public defender offices, you know, anti-trafficking networks, you know, all these different kind of constituencies are supporting this legislation. So, you know, and but that said, you know, I asked Amy Paulin, the assemblywoman who sponsored the bill, and, you know, what she thought, you know, what do you think are the chances that it'll pass? And she said, you know, I never speculate because it's a new bill. And so she didn't want to kind of get into that. So I guess it remains to be seen. And I also reached out to the governor's office, but they didn't get back to me. So, I guess we'll see.
So it's interesting because you started this bit when you were talking about the back page, that kind of advertisement being ended.
Right.
But that was sort of a way for people not to have to walk on the street.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, that's now that, you know, back page was seized and, you know, and the SESTA-FOSTA legislation has been signed by President Trump last week. So it's kind of really up in the air to see how that new law is enforced and what its impact is going to be on sex workers. But I think by and large, they say that they've predicted themselves that, you know, the impact is going to be negative. And, you know, but, you know, you might wonder if this legislation, you know, because people are learning more about it and, you know, there might be, maybe there will be, you know, more conversations about, you know, what would a regulated, legalized sex work industry look like if that's something that people want. You know, I think anti-trafficking people will kind of say, you know, that a lot, they will kind of emphasize that many people who are into prostitution do so not of their own volition. But I think a lot of sex workers would counter that, you know, they are choosing to do it. And so maybe what if, you know, there were laws in place that would make it safer and that would bring you kind of out of the shadows or out of the streets. So there's a tension there that I, you know.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those topics which lots of people prefer never to talk about, right, because it gets them into such difficult conversations.
Yeah. Another maybe not so serious, although sometimes maybe it is just a serious kind of issue, is marijuana. And this week, the alt has a kind of a marijuana-focused issue coming out. And it's obviously been in the news quite a bit, marijuana, because Cynthia Nixon, who's challenging Governor Andrew Cuomo, from the left, probably you could say, has said that she wants to legalize, not just decriminalize, but legalize recreational use of marijuana. Obviously, New York already legalized medicinal marijuana. And, you know, in New York City, you know, while it is still enforced substantially and it has a disproportionate racial impact in New York City in terms of arrests, marijuana, there's a trend towards issuing summonses or, you know, rather than, you know, making, you know, rather like prosecuting it as hard as you might in, you know, in the 90s or in the 80s or something like that. Nonetheless, Governor Cuomo last year, he's a little more conservative on marijuana, you might say. Like last year, he said it was a gateway drug. But
that's
this
interesting,
year.
But then he just issued a statement today saying that he and Bernie Sanders are in lockstep on many issues.
Right. And so I think now that he's being challenged by, you know, Cynthia Nixon, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's supported legislation to decriminalize marijuana before. And now he's saying that now he's kind of ordered the health department to conduct a study, like what would a kind of tax and regulate model of recreational marijuana look like in New York State. This week, I wrote about what's happening in Massachusetts. They voted through a referendum in 2016 to legalize recreational marijuana, and since then they've kind of been setting up all these different steps. There's been legislative debates. They have this new commission called the Cannabis Control Commission, which I think is kind of a neat entity that actually exists, and they. So this, as soon as this summer, this July 1st, there will be potentially licensed retail marijuana shops open in Massachusetts, some of which will be quite close to the Capital Region, like in Pittsfield, for instance. There's going to they've set in each municipality in Massachusetts can choose to ban it basically if they want. But Pittsfield is one of these cities that has said, you know, we'll allow it and maybe it would even be good for us. Yeah.
So you ban the sale of it, not to ban the use of it.
Right. Ban these shops from opening up. Yes. It's legal to possess now, and you can't smoke it in public or anything, but you can do it in the privacy of your own home if you so choose. One question I had was just like, well, all these marijuana is coming to Massachusetts. It's not in New York. Will New York tourists kind of go and, you know, go to Pittsfield and for the, you know, and go use it? And the answer is maybe, I guess, you know, there's still, and so after July 1st, after the retail shops open, then then later next year, there could also be the marijuana cafes like in Amsterdam, or you know, or they you could sell it at a yoga studio, or you could sell it and consume it on site. So on site consumption could happen as soon as next year. So big changes are afoot in Massachusetts, and I reached out to like a New York tourism like trade group and asked like, hey, is this on your radar? And it wasn't. And you know, like the Business Council of New York State also said they don't have a formal position at this point on recreational marijuana. I was kind of speculating, you know, what things start to move maybe if the tourism industry is like, hey, you know, this could be a real asset for New York if recreational marijuana were open or were legal. But
it'd be quite a combination with the booming distillery microbrew.
Well, you can see the similarities, right? And for my story, I talked to this one guy who kind of maintains this online database of like marijuana, like basically does marijuana tours in a couple different states and strings together kind of like craft marijuana things together. And he was like, you know, Massachusetts has a real opportunity here. They should not delay anymore, because they were originally going to have the marijuana shops opening sooner. But then some of the Republican lawmakers and the governor were a little bit skittish about it. So the deadline has kind of been pushed back. But the other thing I'll say that's interesting about Massachusetts' legislation, and I think what New York will probably end up copying if we do end up legalizing, which it seems kind of inevitable. I think the governor even said something like, well, you know, now that it's being legalized all around us, you know, it's only a matter of time before it comes here in one way mm-hmm. or the other. So we have to proceed as knowing that it's going to be legal in New Jersey and, you know, is already legal in, you know, in Massachusetts. One part of the Massachusetts law that's interesting is that it has a kind of a social justice component. So the Cannabis Control Commission has designated over 24 cities across Massachusetts as areas that disproportionately suffered from marijuana criminalization or arrests. And if you're from one of those areas, or if you're a person of color, or you know, there's a couple different kind of criteria that if you meet that, then you can get prioritized applications for, you know, for getting a license to sell marijuana in the state, and you can also get kind of technical assistance with your application or with certain facets of running your business. So that could be a real asset too for that. And I think that's something that Liz Krueger, a senator in New York, she has since for a couple years now proposed a law to legalize marijuana that also had a kind of social justice component, or that it tried to get at that. I think maybe like the sale, the marijuana would be taxed, and then the proceeds from that tax would go toward kind of community grant sort of funding. So there's a couple ways to kind of attack that, but I think that states are kind of looking now at like not only how can we just legalize it, because we don't want to just legalize it and have it open to, you know, big pharma to come in and run, you know, just run the industry, right? How can we make sure that there are ways, you know, to kind of ensure that it's reintroduced in a way that, you know, that recognizes that many people's lives have kind of been ruined over marijuana, you know, criminalization. And all of a sudden now it's like, oh, this is, oh, now it's just like a fun, you know, it takes it seriously, I guess.
Well, that's tremendous, especially given that a huge prison population that New York has from marijuana arrests from my understanding, are predominantly people of color. To legalize marijuana and not include that would seem very deeply unjust.
I think it'll be interesting, too, to see, you know, I think I may have talked about him on the show before, but the district attorney in Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, who came into office in Philadelphia kind of on a criminal justice sort of platform, he has put out like policy. He's basically said, you know, we're not going to charge marijuana offenses at all anymore. Like, I'm not interested in pursuing those charges. You know, district attorneys have a tremendous amount of discretion in terms of what they charge and what they don't charge, right? And he's also said similar things, actually, now that I think of it, about sex work. I think he's basically said, you know, for people charged once or twice or maybe even three times, like, we're not really going to prosecute those people. If they're arrested more than that, we'll refer them to a kind of specialty court that handles these kinds of cases. But we're not really that interested in pursuing those cases. That's something to watch, I think, in New York. There's two different district attorneys just in this capital. There's a district attorney's race coming up in Saratoga County, and there's a district attorney's race coming up in Rensselaer County. And I'm interested in asking those candidates, you know, what Is that on the table? Like, is that something you guys would consider, not prosecuting marijuana offenses or only prosecuting them in certain situations? You know, you can imagine a scenario where a district attorney would say that, would come out and say, you know what, I'm not going to charge this. I'm not interested. I'm going to focus our scarce resources on you know, more serious cases. What, you know, how would that impact the police? Would the police then say, all right, well, if he's not going to prosecute them, then we won't even bother arresting people? Would they still continue to? I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thought experiment. I'm not sure anyone knows what would happen. But
it would seem to me that even just answering your question might cause them a lot of Facebook harm.
Yeah. Never underestimate Facebook outrage, I guess. It's a good question, and I don't know the answer, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff to think about. Yeah. Well, that, I think, is out of time for us, Luke. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, as always.